little tiny changes can have big consequences because it's a whole systems approach. The ag in the Salinas Valley is constantly rotating. So at the core, yes, the stakeholders have put enforcement on your table. But it's the problem is they moved the point of compliance when they did that. They moved it to the farm. And it really should be the water body.
Well, but isn't that where compliance starts? It's at the farm.
Sure, but you need the farm to achieve it because time and Mother Nature, sunlight and agitation and dilution and natural attenuation all occur, right? So vegetative filter strips, I mean, what is that, right? Doesn't necessarily mean that every single farm has to do that, but that's why we've talked about these collective micro-treatment systems. You know, you've got farms all draining into each other. It's really ineffective to try and have every farm draining into each other all with these different types of systems. But if you do it all collectively at the bottom of the drain, take 20 acres, whatever the size is, you can have these different types of approaches. Everyone's going to do something different. If you own your land or if you lease your land, if you're a big farm or a small farm, right? Everyone's going to do something different. And the staff proposal, like I said, they tried to do BMPs, but they're universal and they don't fit for everybody. And that's why we tried to offer auditing so that everyone can choose their own BMP and then report back to you what that looks like. Take that highest 10% of folks who are at risk, the greatest risk, and give that back to you.
I didn't think there was anything in the order where staff was proposing to dictate PMPs, so I mean, I would just like to hear from them.
Holding the half inch of water. What if I put grass at the end of every row instead of holding a half inch of water? That's an erosion control technique, right? Without holding water.
It actually doesn't say holding water. It says to do BMPs, to control the half inch. So whatever that is, grass.
Control the half inch.
So I think it was control, infiltrate, or treat. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. Your grass example would be great because it would help infiltration, right?
I mean, I see that as a requirement, but the BMP would be a choice of the farmer as to how he was going to go ahead and achieve that result.
We hope so. If you move forward with the staff proposal, I would just encourage you. There's lots and lots of language that needs to reflect the sentiment discussed because it doesn't.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Can I ask Rick a question?
Of course.
You talked about all the options that farmers would choose from and that one size doesn't fit all. And it was my understanding of Tier 2, which applies to Tier 3, that there's a farm plan involved that requires irrigation, nutrient, erosion, management, et cetera. And for me, those are categories of groups of actions or techniques that the growers have to choose from whatever works for them. So I didn't understand the farm plan requirement to require it to include certain things for everyone, but for everyone to create a farm plan that worked for their specifics.
Yes, that's correct in the farm plan, and there's a variety of plans, and I think the intent is much like what we talked about in our proposal, where you go through and evaluate a series of things. You do it farm-specific. So I think the intent there is very good. I'm just saying when you get a variety of folks giving you different examples of what doesn't work, it's because there's a variety of other things in there that impose these requirements, right? So I don't know. I'd have to look in to see if it still has the language in there about if you do a retention pond, you got to line it.
There is no language that says you have to line it. It says you have to...
I'm sorry, you can't... Please go ahead, I'm sorry.
It says you have to make sure you construct it and do irrigation efficiency so that we aren't percolating a discharge of waste to groundwater or something like that.
Right, so no percolation. So I don't know what
to
do.
It doesn't say don't percolate. You can, for example, one of Dr. Los Huertas' students is working on a veg treatment system to bring nitrate down, right? So it's possible that we can control the nitrate using wood chips, for example, and put that into an unlined basin.
Sure. And I think if we went through that section, I don't want to take all your time to do that, but you would read those words and you'd see there's a lot of variability. And if it's interpreted as just presented, that'd be great. In other times, it's not been described that way.
Rick, don't you think that in a regulatory environment where it's our job to provide some regulatory sideboards, that it's a tough line to walk between having a lot of variability and not trying to be too specific? Because if we try to be too specific, you know, that could cause problems. And if we have too much variability, as you're mentioning right now, it leaves things so open that there's some concerns on that side. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm sure you understand that balance, you know, we're trying to find that balance.
Right, and what we did in our proposal was we tried to do that by giving you regular reports through the auditing that was occurring and the water quality monitoring that was occurring in the streams. So you're getting that on a regular annual basis. And then your tables, the tables that were previously referred to, tables 2, 3, and 4 that have all the schedules and milestones, that you would look to those tables. Those would still be what would drive compliance. It's just the interim reporting would not be edge of field monitoring. It would be reports by the coalition.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you. Brad Barbeau, Kirk Schmidt, Joel Wiley, Heidi Niggemeier, Dirk Giannini, Kay Mercer, and David Costa. That will conclude everything.
That's a lot of names left.
Well, we'll find out as I call each one.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Barbeau. Dr. Yes. Barbeau.
Hi. Brad Barbeau. I'm on the faculty of the School of Business at Cal State Monterey Bay. just a couple things. Clearly, the issue here isn't whether there is a problem, but how we best solve the problem that's out there. And just a couple things I want to point out from the study that Kay and I did. The difference among growers, the impact on growers, looks like, going with the straight proposal, is quite large, going from tens of dollars per acre to hundreds of dollars per acre. And this is within, going across tiers, and even within tier, there's a huge difference in the impact on different growers. So, you know, the ability of different growers to respond to this is going to vary. One of the impacts we want to remember is that, and I think a useful way to think about this is that the regulation, the cost of the regulation and the cost of the best management practices are added costs that don't grow any more lettuce, so to speak. They don't add another head of lettuce. So we're talking about taking an amount of revenue and spreading it more widely or thinner. So there was a comment somewhere in the staff response that, well, this is going to create new jobs. And the math doesn't work. The only way you can create new jobs is by creating new income, higher income, and there isn't higher income. What there will be is a shift in jobs. And one of those shifts from a social justice standpoint that we may have to live with, but we should be aware of, is that what the jobs that will increase are going to be white-collar jobs. They're going to be PCAs and CCAs are going to become rare as hen's teeth. And what growers pay them with has to come out of somewhere. And basic economics would say some of that's going to come out of farm workers' pockets, or it's going to come out of farm workers' jobs. So there is the potential for that kind of shift of jobs. So, from an economic standpoint, we can think that there's two broad categories of costs, if you will. One is oversight and enforcement, which includes the monitoring and the planning and any enforcement costs involved. And then there's the cost of actually fixing the problem. Monitoring doesn't fix the problem. Reporting doesn't fix the problem. Those are are things you have to do as part of the regulatory process, but it's actually taking the actions in the field that fix the problem. So there's the cost of the corrective measures. And it seems obvious that we would want to do this in a way that minimizes the oversight costs, minimizes the sort of added bureaucratic or regulatory costs, and maximizes how much money is being allocated to actually fixing the problem, if you will. And to me, that makes the proposal of, yes, my colleague, Mark Los Huertos, really interesting, because it appears to drastically reduce the overhead costs while still pushing for the best management practices to get implemented and make sure that those get implemented. So I really encourage you to find a way to look closely, not just at the ag alternative as it was submitted some months ago, but he's done an awful lot of work since then that should be looked at to fix some of the things that hadn't been developed as much in the earlier one.
Can you wrap it up, Dr. Barbo? Okay.
That was it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kirk Schmidt. He left. I don't believe it. He's always here. I'm going to put his card at the bottom. I've never seen him leave. Okay, Joel Wiley. He did leave? Okay. Mr. Wiley?
Good evening. Thank you very much, and thank you for taking the time to do this today. I'm a CCA, been practicing a CCA since the beginning of the program in 1979. I've been a PCA that was 1992 with CCAs. I've been a PCA since 1979, so about 30 years of being related in the agricultural community. And in the last 5 years, there's been a tremendous move towards improving practices. I think the initial waiver program developed that stimulation of thought process and nutrient input. I became really concerned, when I attended one of your meetings, and I started to see him criticize a guy that I have a great deal of respect for, and that's Dr. Tim Hartz. Because I felt he was being criticized by the board by some of his research, some of his dialogue that he presented, and I became concerned that that's maybe a direction that we're taking, the wrong direction, because he is a leader in nutrient management. I think there is a huge fear factor, and I think the five bullets that the executive director put forth created a polarized group, and there is a tremendous amount of fear with this process. I hope you will consider the Ag Alternative Program. The coalition has an outstanding direction that it's going to take, and I think it would be a positive for our community. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Heidi Niggemeier, then Mr. Giannini.
Okay, so I'm going to try and make this as quick as I can. Because
you have 3 minutes.
That's it?
Three minutes.
Okay, so I'm Heidi Niggemeier, and I'm the program manager for Monterey Regional Stormwater Program. So I represent 7 of the coastal cities and part of Monterey County. And I see what's happening here is that agriculture is kind of the last to be regulated, and so they're having this really tough issue getting up with all the rest of us who have been regulated for quite some time. And I really appreciate the iterative approach by Dr. Los Huertos, because it's very much like the phase two rule was at the very beginning, the iterative approach. The tier system's good. Phase twos are having the same issue that the ag is having, is monitoring for monitoring's sake. And so it's really important that if they do come up with a collaborative monitoring program that asks the right questions and has a system or a method for trying to determine the answers, that the regional board take that seriously, because we're having the same issues where the state, we just don't see the science behind the model monitoring amendment or ASBS special protections monitoring. Also, I wanted to say that the coastal communities really should not be responsible for what's coming down the watershed. And right now, what's happening with our coastal communities, we have the ASBS special protections, we've got TMDLs on the Pajaro River and Salinas River, and we've got the phase two stormwater permit that's coming out that has receiving water requirements. And the problem is that when it gets down to our area or down to our end of pipe and it shows up in our monitoring, we're responsible. And if we have an exceedance and we're now having be held to table B requirements are very much like drinking water, and we get fined. And we will get an NOV, and that's just the reality of life, and that's just the way this happens. And unfortunately, I realize, you know, it's costing us millions, it will cost us millions of dollars to do this monitoring, and we're doing it on a collaborative regional basis. So it costs money to do this because you have to protect water quality. And that's the one hole that's in this whole watershed protection is the agricultural pieces of which we don't know what the data is and what they're putting out, and so therefore we don't know which part of it is ours. And so we're held responsible for it since we're at the bottom of the watershed. So it's something that's really important. I applaud you all for sticking to most of your guns on this, because I think, unfortunately, the way all the conversations are sounding, you know, when I worked in refining, I had a program, I had a unit that I had to oversee, and it was constantly had its relief valve open, and it was spewing HF into the gas into the air. So I took a project to fix it to my plant manager, and he said, "Well, I'm sorry, the economics are not there." And you know, I said, "You know, I don't know if you believe this, but you breathe the same air as everybody else breathes, and you don't live in a bubble, and this is going to eventually affect you." So that's what I'm feeling here tonight, is that, you know, this probably isn't going to really hit hard until the people who are also in agriculture don't have clean drinking water. And then the whole peninsula doesn't have, we have contaminated drinking water. We'll still be growing lettuce, but we won't have any water to drink. So it's something to really consider. I mean, I don't believe that this, what you're putting forward, is so constrictive on the agricultural community. They can come out, they can work with us to come up with some kind of regional collaborative monitoring program, because we're working with the POTWs and other entities right now as well to try and set something up because of what we're having to go through with ASBS and the Phase 2 program and Ocean Plan amendments. So from a Phase 2 city's point of view or regional group's point of view, this is something that needed to come for quite some time, because the rest of us are held to really stringent water quality standards. So, you know, it's about time we all were on the same level playing field. Thanks.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Giannini? Kay Mercer? Mr. Costa? And maybe Mr. Schmidt? But go ahead.
Good evening, Chair and Board members. My name is Dirk Giannini, manager of Christensen and Giannini, who grows various row crops in the Salinas Valley. I'm a fourth-generation farmer who has been farming my entire life. I am supporting the Ag Coalition approach and the inclusion of Dr. Los Huerta's report. When I come to these workshops, it never seems to amaze me that when staff makes their presentation, I learn how they interpret what they wrote. Being the Monterey County Farm Bureau president and a member of numerous organizations, I have received many consolidated updates on what the staff has presented in the past and its ongoing changes, content, and interpretation. For example, tonight, the acres in Tier 1, 2, and 3 are significantly skewed and would have been presented before. There are many more acres in Tier 3 as reported this afternoon, unless there's a question or change in interpretation. The Tier 3 500-acre minimum has been prescribed by ranch, and that is not what was said this afternoon. It was said this afternoon that is whether you farm 500 acres of a high nitrogen crop. Tonight, I also learned that I can allow 90 parts per million of nitrates discharged from my ranch as long as I can show improvement if it was originally 100, yet it was not supported by legal advice. While I have interpreted this portion of the staff proposal that my farm cannot discharge more than drinking water standards. I think this is a symptom and a flaw with the stakeholder and staff relationship, if you would even call it that, a relationship. Our system of communication with staff is broken. There is minimal dialogue that takes place between a handful of organizations, and the communication is basically trying to understand what has been presented at a hearing or a workshop. I am very concerned that we are trying to push this staff proposal through with a workshop this evening and a March hearing. It has taken us since 2008 to get where we are today with five workshops. How can we cram all of this information and the evolution of the two proposals into one workshop and one hearing March with our new directors? I have also testified before that the industry has surpassed science. And in such a time where we need more science, we are preventing a professor, a doctor, mind you, Dr. Mark Las Huertas, to present his proposal this evening. I think this is representative of the relationship between the stakeholders and staff. In addition, our local UC Cooperative Extension advisors' input and recommendations have seemed to be tuned out. Interesting enough, these are the scientists that we have a lot of academia resources that growers work with, and usually most regions try to get ahead of such science and help the growing community comply with such regulations as this one.
Can you wrap up, Mr. Giannini?
Yes. With this being said, I urge you to allow Dr. Los Huertas' proposal from one of our most knowledgeable academic leaders in the area to enter the record for review, and in conjunction with the Act proposal as an extension of those concepts. I also want to reiterate what my colleagues have said in the past. The staff proposal requires the industry to submit layers of documents, monitoring results, and tests. As we go forward, this will require me personally in my organization to worry about hiring someone to make sure my family business complies with your regulations, submitting multiple layers of paperwork, and not really focus on the ground needed projects and BMPs improving water quality, which we're why we're here tonight. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Any questions?
Yeah, I have a question for Dirk. If you could,
pull your speak, pull your microphone.
You said that there's actually many more Tier 3 acres than the 51,000 acres that we were told tonight. Could you expand on that?
The reports I've been getting is, with the amount of leafy greens that are considered high nitrate users, that those acres would be in Tier 3. And I don't know the number off the top of my head, but they're significantly more than what staff has indicated this afternoon.
So has there been a number out there that's been distributed through the public?
I think it's information through Preservation Inc. and the Ag Committee's working groups, that number, but it was significantly a higher percentage, and maybe one of my colleagues might know it, but I don't know off the top of my head. It was more than the percentage that Angela indicated.
All right, thank you. And I wonder, does staff have some?
Well, I can tell you how we came up with our numbers. So our numbers are all based upon an evaluation of information through the electronic notice of intent submitted by growers themselves. So it's the actual data for growers enrolled in the current order. And that's actually the numbers have refined, and you'll notice that there are more acreage in growers in Tier 1 and 2 than we had originally anticipated, and that's because as I think Jean-Pierre indicated at a few meetings ago, there is significant SIP certified acreage that we didn't know about, and now we have the data at hand to actually do the tiering analysis.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Dirk.
Okay. Kay.
Yes.
Where have you been?
I
called you before, but went to have lunch?
Yeah, no.
Dinner? Okay.
No.
Go ahead.
Before you begin, could I address Mr. Delgado's question about acreage?
Go ahead.
Okay. Essentially, when Brad and I did the economic analysis in 2010, we were unable to actually calculate the number of acres in each tier. We could not verify staff's numbers. And we didn't have we didn't have access to the information we needed to verify. So there is no way for us to say how many acres will be in Tier 1, Tier 2, or Tier 3. So it is anyone's best guess at this point in time, because when they made the change from operation to size of operation to size of farm, you basically are going to have to get maps out and look and do counts physically. So it's almost impossible to make those assessments.
I'm sorry, through the chair.
Go ahead.
You don't think that the notice of intents that were submitted to the board provide
I have no idea. I don't have access to that information. I don't have access, and the notice of intents are based on operation size. They're not based on farm size.
Sorry, they're based upon individual ranch.
Individual ranch, which is a farm?
Grower operations enroll each individual farm or ranch.
See, I think one of my comments about, and I think this is a pervasive theme, is there's a lot of information in the order that is basically discretionary interpretation. So what's a ranch, what's a farm? So 5 years from now, when we're having this discussion, will it mean the same thing to whatever staff member is sitting here? Will a farm and a ranch mean the same thing as it does tonight? Will the discussions about compliance mean the same thing 5 years from now as it does tonight? Based upon where we've been in the last 8 years, I would hazard to say that the answer is no, they won't mean the same thing. So clarification is a critical point in the order, regardless of what you adopt. It needs to be much clearer, and it needs to be verifiable. We can't just have staff saying this is the truth and there's no way for the public to verify it.
Okay, I'm going to start your 3 minutes.
You want me to? Okay.
I was going to say I'm not going to give you 2 minutes.
Oh, you're going to cut me off.
Before you started.
Okay.
And
you're only going to give me 2 minutes?
No, I said I was not going to say.
Oh.
I'm just giving you 2 minutes because you went way over that. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm Kay Mercer, and I thank you for having us here today. I really appreciate the patience and the very thoughtful questions. I'm a consultant, and I work with members of the agricultural community on management and production improvements to protect water quality and natural resources. I'm coming to you tonight to talk about hope. And I would say in the past 3 years, I have not been able to talk about hope. Did not feel any hope until I started working with Mark in June of last year. And that hope came because of his thoughtfulness, and he was solution-focused. I do not feel that the order that is on the table is solution-focused. What Mark has, it's not punitive, it's not command and control, it's not vague or ambiguous, it doesn't spin facts, it's not lose-win, it's not a false proposition that will fail to deliver results, it's not empty rhetoric, it's not counterfeit collaboration. It's an approach that embraces solutions, it recognizes that we don't have the answers, it recognizes that it's going to take time, a lot of time. The one big issue that is not being discussed is lag time. How long does it take from the time you implement a management practice until you see improvement? It varies. Staff has read the articles by Mr. Mills, Dr. Mills, out of the Midwest. It is verifiable. Lag time is really important. His solution is iterative, it's adaptive, it's measurable. It requires complementary use of skills and resources and empowers the stakeholder. It reduces the oppressive footprint of regulation without ignoring the regulatory mandate. Can it be improved? Yes. Does it have weaknesses? Yes. I could elaborate on those, but I'm going to run out of time. His proposal addresses water quality. I'm not asking you to delay anything. In fact, I'm asking you to take action. go to a solution-based approach. Do not adopt the existing order that is on the table, because it is not solution-focused. It is bad policy. And so we adopt it because we've run out of time, but then we spend the next 20 years trying to fix bad policy. I've been intimately involved with this process. It's been anything but positive. What's on the table is a point source approach. When you look at a farm and you are monitoring at the farm level, you're not looking at a complex biological system. You're basically imposing a point source approach, and it's not appropriate, and it won't solve your problems. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Costa, last but certainly not least.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. David Costa, Costa Farms. I want to speak to a couple of points made earlier by some other speakers. One speaker talked about crop values, and I know that the Monterey County Crop Report reports gross crop values, not net crop values. We operate in an area of high gross crop value and high production costs, so I really don't think that our margins are all that rosy. I mean, the numbers that get floated out there include the boxes and bags and the labor to harvest a crop and everything else, and has no reflection on any net returns, you know, from the crop. Another speaker lady was talking about infiltrating, controlling, and treating runoff from, you know, the first half inch of any storm. I want to give you a couple of examples of what's gone on in years past. Soledad gets about 11 to 12 inches of rain on average. March of 95, on the valley floor, we had 5.5 inches of rain in a day and a half, so almost half our annual rainfall in a day and a half. The foothills above us had 8 inches of rain. The top of the Santa Lucia Range above us had 12 inches of rain in that same day and a half. All that water is running from top, trying to get to the river. It's going to go around or through or over whatever it wants to. And when the ground is saturated, it's not going to take any water. You're not going to infiltrate any water. When the water's running like that, you're not going to control it. You're not going to treat it. So I guess we're out of compliance in those situations. But, you know, there's exceptions to a lot of things that, you know, happen fairly often. Chular on the east side in 97, 98, the El Nino year, had 10 inches of rain on the top of the mountain range. That water came down Chular Creek, and a Christmas tree that got dumped by somebody from one of the houses upstream of the creek plugged the culvert, broke the creek out through our ranch, and for a day and a half, Chular Creek ran through our ranch, and all the 10 inches of rain trying to get from top to bottom. So there's, you know, when you see language about, you know, you get infiltrate, you know, the first half inch of rain from every storm. But when the ground's saturated, tomorrow it's still going to be saturated. The day after, it's still going to be saturated, you know, and you might infiltrate the first 0.05 or the first 1/10 of an inch of rain, you know, in a couple of days later. But in periods of successive storms, it's, you know, it's not going to happen. And you couldn't build a structure big enough to hold the volume of water that comes from multiple storms. For the benefit of the new board members, I did want to talk about the complexity of cool season vegetable production along the coast. Our farm has 414 individual fields. The average size of those fields is 13 acres. Those blocks get broken down further, some blocks. So we have these multiple staggered plantings. We're harvesting, you know, 6 days a week through the growing season that's available to us here in the valley. So as we plant through the year, the average size of each individual planting is 8 acres. And we average about 2.1 crops per acre. Some of those crops are 29 days from planting to harvest. Others are 125 or 40 days, depending on the crop and the season. But when the year's, you know, all said and done, we raised 20 different crops, and the total number of individual plantings that we have in a year's time is 1,350. So the point I'm trying to make is it has to do with the complexity of any reporting component in terms of, you know, nitrate application or use, you know, the format that's, you know, going to somehow happen in. And I would ask the question, how is anybody going to interpret the data, not just from our one operation, but from all the acres in the region that are reporting, you know, similar kind of numbers. I don't understand how somebody could make heads or tails out of the pile of information that's going to come their way. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
David, can I ask you a couple questions? Sorry, I didn't speak sooner.
That's okay. Thank you.
You referred to that rule 34 about the first inch and a half. The first half inch, we do something. Then the next inch, we do something else. And you said that, boy, that would put you out of compliance. And has it caused you any compliance issues? Since 2004, because my understanding is that it's just a carryover from 2004.
I mean, I don't see where it is. To me, this looks like something new. And I get concerned about, you know, language that exists that maybe isn't going to be enforced or wasn't enforced, but which can be enforced. And, you know, a prior speaker talked about, you know, advice that would be given to clients about, you know, signing off on something that, you know, might selectively, you know, be enforced at somebody else's choosing. So I think we always have to be cognizant of that fact. And I think I just try to pass along kind of some real world experiences so that people understand exactly some of the things that do happen when Mother Nature so chooses.
All right. And then I think what it's getting at is sort of that first flush effect, that if you have a rain event after a period of dryness, that there's going to be more impact of nutrients going somewhere because you're flushing them. It's like off a road of a street, no different really. I don't think we're talking about building any containment structure. It was just a way of trying to get that first flush from doing something other than running into a receiving water, but rather trying to percolate it or treat it so that we don't have a first flush effect. I think that's where it's getting at. So maybe the language could be clarified so that it was
I think it could be greatly clarified, because I think there's a lot of different interpretations for a lot of valid reasons on the language that exists.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Okay. I think we're at the end of the road, the show tonight, right? It's 9:45, so we can go home.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Can I ask a question?
Of course.
If we're going to take any action to direct staff to do anything on the ag waiver, does that have to happen tonight, or can it happen tomorrow?
It can happen tomorrow, because the way your agenda is written, that you can talk about this tomorrow if you want to.
When?
Whenever you want to fit it into the agenda.
Pardon?
I have a few thoughts that occur to me. I'd like to just...
Why don't you... how much time do you think you'll...
3 minutes?
Go ahead. Do
it. Put the timer
let's
on.
Let's do it.
Put the timer on. I know this workshop was partly for my benefit as a new board member, and, you know, I'm fully aware of how long you guys have spent, the staff and the stakeholders as well, and the board working on this, because... I have a foot and a half double-sided that I've been spending 15 to 20 hours a week trying to wade through for the last 6 weeks, and I'm halfway through, I'm happy to say. So I feel kind of unprepared to have any full conclusions today on this stuff. I mean, I've told our executive director when we talked about agendizing this for March that I would be ready to deal conclusively with it then. I feel like, despite the fact that so much time has been spent on it, me as a board member, I have to understand it to rule on it. And I guess my concern is, you know, let me just give you a couple of really quick impressions. I'm much more sympathetic to farm workers than to farmers, quite frankly. I spent my life organizing and representing farm workers. I've fought more often with farmers than than worked with them. But you know, I'm aware that those jobs are real too. I guess my primary concern is what can we do as a board to improve the water quality. I'm particularly concerned with the toxicity of the surface waters and the nitrate loading of the groundwater. I'm not necessarily interested in what's the stiffest regulatory approach or in what's the least onerous economic approach on the industry. I'm interested in what approach is going to have the maximum impact. I was interested by what Dr. De los Huertos, I have to work to not call him De los Muertos now, what Dr. De los Huertos had to say. You know, I don't know if that's a productive avenue for us to follow. I see some problems with it. I saw the recommendation slide that they want to sit down with board staff and the conservation and scientific community to talk about developing it further. I think there were probably some stakeholders missing from that list. And I see some other problems with it as well. I see the need to have some real detailed, fine-scale sub-watershed reporting of groundwater quality. That's data that we frankly need to understand what's going on and to understand what's working and what isn't working. But I guess my question is, if the board is, and like I said, I feel like I'm going to be prepared to deal with this in March more than I am now, but if we as the board are going to direct staff to do some work on this, as opposed to saying, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down in March, part of me says we should do that earlier rather than later because so much time has passed. So I kind of want to throw it to my fellow board members. I mean, I don't have a fully formed opinion on this yet, but if you all are going to be going with something that says let's have staff do some work on seeing if we can pull stakeholders together and seeing if we can have either some look at the ag alternative or two paths to go on, then part of me says maybe we better look at that now rather than later. If you people know that that's the direction you want to look, so I just think it's something we should appropriately discuss among the board, because if we're going to go that way, and you guys probably have clearer opinions than I do on that. But if we're going to go that way, we're better off doing it now than waiting 6 weeks and doing it.
Well, I think we've been asking staff to make some modifications and clarifications in the order as we've gone along with the workshop. If there's anything specific that you feel that we should direct staff to kind of address, we can do that too. Now, if you're suggesting that we should send them off to meet with the ag community, is that what you're referring to, kind of a...
Well, there's a fundamentally different concept in the ag alternative, and what I'm hearing is that the ag alternative has been somewhat of a moving target, and what was presented to us today without documentation, and I really understand the problems with opening the record to drop one thing in and then closing it again. We can't do that. Right. But what was presented to us was something that said, well, that we've moved further. It is fundamentally different in some ways. And what interests me about it is if there's a way that we can engage farmers, innovative and creativity as opposed to just their creativity in responding to regulation. We may be able to make some further progress here. I don't think that clarifying this little piece of language and clarifying that little piece of language, we're still left with two fundamentally different concepts. And if we move forward and approve the order as it exists, with whatever tweaks, then I think that the ag alternative becomes something that if they choose to pursue it, they can then bring and see if they can get the executive director to agree to let the huge chunk of ag opt into something completely different. But, you know, that's a fairly uncertain prospect. So, I mean, from my history as a negotiator, we will probably never be in a better negotiating position with agriculture than we are right now if we choose to engage in that. And I guess I kind of want to just get a sense from the other board members, because you folks have spent a lot more time and energy on this than I have, and I think you have more formed opinions.
Who do you think would be involved in negotiating with ag? I mean, do you have a... It's not us.
It's not us.
No.
I get that. That was the first big shock once I got this gig.
In fact, it can't be us.
Absolutely.
So that's what...
I think it would be... we would be giving direction to staff as to how we wanted them to handle that, and part of what I would recommend as direction would be that I don't just want ag and the scientific and consulting community in the room, but the other stakeholders would have to be there too. And maybe this is something we should think about and take up tomorrow. I don't know. Yeah. But I wanted to lay it out there because and I don't know where the other board members are at on this, but if this is something we're going to look at, we're better off doing it now than 6 weeks from now because the clock is ticking.
Yeah. Well, we only have one other board member that can vote on this, and that's Mr. Jordan. Right? There's no one else.
Well,
yeah, so
I count... You guys as well.
Yeah, no, I know, but when you say the other board members, there's only, you know, Mr. Jordan. But, you know, the problem we've had historically is that you've heard about this discussion of a breakdown, and there was a change in staff involved with this program. There isn't an easy way to fix that. You know, we direct Roger, and we don't direct the staff directly. It's only through Roger. And so he has a team set up that's been developing the program.
I understand that.
And so, you know, there's been a lot of opportunity for them to, for staff who has met with a lot of these groups repeatedly over the years, you know, to hammer some of this out. I think what we have is staffs feel that this is what they want us to consider and vote up or down. You know, it's evolved to this point. And I don't know that any of us really have formed a final opinion yet. That's not supposed to happen until we've heard everything.
I certainly haven't.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a lot of opinions, but I'm always open-minded until the end.
Well, until you hear the public hearing,
you can't make a
total opinion.
Right.
Because you haven't heard the public totally.
Yeah. You know, there are some ways I might go about this personally if I ran this, which might be different than Russ or Monica or in time, you know, the rest of us. But this is what has developed. But let's talk about it. Do we want to direct staff to do anything at this point more in terms of meeting, and how would that look? And, you know, ag is complex. There isn't one representative.
Tell me about
it. I mean, this is what happens.
Well, Mr. Chair, this is a very complex order, and it's a very complex issue because it affects a heck of a lot of people, and it affects a heck of a lot of jobs and economic development within this whole region that we're in. And I've said this before at a previous meeting, that when the proposal came from ag about the cooperative monitoring, it sounded good to me, and I think I indicated to the staff I wanted them to investigate, and I wanted to bring the ag and all the people involved, including the environmental side, to see if they couldn't work on that, because I thought it had possibilities. And the other thing that I was concerned about, and a lot of you have heard me say this over the last 10 years probably, is that, making the orders that are understandable, that somebody doesn't have to go out and hire an attorney to interpret what the order says. That's one of the issues that I've had, because I'm a layperson. Sometimes I have a hard time understanding. Now, the staff can explain what it means, but 6 months from now, will that same interpretation be consistent? Are we going to have the same staff involved in this in 6 months, a year, or 4 years, or 5 years from now? They'll give the same interpretation to these same people out here that are spending millions of dollars to accomplish what we're asking them to do. And I have not heard one person out here that has said that they don't want to have better water quality. There has not been one person tonight, any other time, last 10, 15 years I've been involved. So I think we're all on the same page, but how do we get there, I think, is the issue that all these people are saying. Nobody's saying that we don't want to do it, but it's how do we get down to the end of the pipe and make it work. Now, we did this in 2004. Sure we did. We can do it now. But I think it has to have these folks get back together and lay everything out. And it just can't be somebody saying, hey, this is what it's going to be, take it or leave it. And that's what I'm kind of hearing from these folks, whether it's the environmental side or whether it's from the ag side. And I heard some of that again tonight and made some notes on it. It's the same thing as interpretation, it's philosophy. And I was quite impressed with, I'm not going to try to attempt your pronounce your name, but
Mark Los Huertos.
Mark, if I can call you Dr. Mark, is that fine? I think you're on the right track. I like some of the things that you've said, but I think that they need to be explored a little bit more. And I think the agriculture world, as well as the environmental world, is finding that there's new technologies that are able to accomplish some of the things that we're trying to do. But it takes smarter people than me that can get all of you folks together and come to, maybe won't come to one agreement, but it'll be some type of agreement that everybody can live with and march forward. And as we're marching forward with a new type of technology and demonstrations and trials, we'll accomplish this. All of you will accomplish it. But you have to look at it in the proper mode. And that's where I have trouble, Mr. Chair, is, you know, sometimes I make statements and I don't make too much sense, but if I'm not understanding, how are these folks supposed to understand? Am I supposed to go hire an attorney? Well, I got attorneys down here, but, pardon?
Well, you call water board staff and... Or write a letter, you get Roger on the phone, or you come to one of our board meetings, the public comment, and you say something.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I've been involved in this for 19 years. I'm going on my 19th year on this board.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, I've enjoyed every minute of it. It's been educational, and that's why I continue to come to these meetings and sit here for, what is this, almost, what, 6 hours? 7 hours?
7 hours, yeah.
Going on 7 hours. Will probably be 12, 14 hours tomorrow. Yeah. But every time I come to one of these meetings, I learn something new, and that's the reason I've stuck with this, is because it's a learning process. Right. But that's beside the point. The point is I want a waiver that the environmental people can stand up and say, we've got something good. I want the ag people to be able to stand up and say, we got something good. And I see people shaking their heads, no, it isn't going to happen. I'm a believer that it can happen. But people have to talk. When you stop talking, that's when the problems start. You know, let's let's clear the trees from the forest so we can see the forest. And but I that's my soapbox. But Mr. Chair, I've said this before, you know, and I don't know, maybe the staff is not hearing me, but I think that there's possibilities in cooperative type of monitoring, and it doesn't exclude, and it doesn't take anybody off the hook. It's still there. But one of the things I really like...
But it's not reported to us. Yeah. So there's no way for us to ensure compliance.
Directly, it will be reported to us.
In an aggregate.
And maybe in an aggregate. But I found that when organizations police themselves, they're a lot harsher on their own individuals than outside people police them. They're harder on their own folks than we might be, because those apples are the ones that they want to get out of that box so it doesn't contaminate the rest of them. And that's where I'm coming from. But anyway.
Okay. Dr. Hunter.
Well, I wish I could imagine myself being as articulate as my fellow board members at this late point, but I just have to chime in a little bit. I agree with a great deal of what you've said, Russ, and I've sat next to you at a lot of meetings and learned a lot from you as well. And I know you've seen a lot of these efforts go forward and actually achieve the kinds of changes that we're trying to implement across the board. But I also want to invoke, I think it was Heidi Niggemeier that said, you know, all of the regulated community is going through this process. We have tackled these issues, you know, sometimes industry by industry, sometimes in a more in terms of point source, non-point source. But the problem of phasing these in has been one, I think, that's been conducted in a very comprehensive way. When the, as Chair Young referred to, the, I think you called it splintered, or when this process kind of broke down, well, here we are. We have had a number of workshops. This board, I think, has gone to a great extent to get the dialogue going again, and I was hoping that I would hear more positive comments tonight, that the dialogue has been restarted. We have had a number of revisions that are significantly different than where we started with the first draft order following the 2004 renewal. So I see a lot of effort. I don't believe that we're going to get to a perfect point and that we're going to have everything we need in this next renewed permit. I think we need to figure out what makes sense, I think. And, of course, I was looking forward to hearing from Dr. Los Huertos. I've had the privilege of working with him over many years in different ways. I have great respect for his work, and I know the community has respect for his work. And for that reason, I was very encouraged to hear that he had a plan, that there's support for it. I am also hoping that we can find a way to integrate the concept under Attachment B, that we come up with a way to provide an opening and a path forward with the framework in mind that Dr. Los Huertos is exploring. But even as he said, he's only gone so far with it because, you know, he needs to know. He needs to hear confirmation from stakeholders beyond the forum community and as well from the board. He needs feedback. That's going to take time. That's not going to happen in a six-month period. That kind of work doesn't happen in 6 months. So from my perspective, I think this is we've come a very long way, and I think we're in a much better place than we were when we were first asked to open up the process and bring the full stakeholder community back to the board. So through these workshops, we've had the privilege of hearing from many, many different perspectives and important and urgent problems being better defined for us as board members because you're living it. And so, you know, that is invaluable to me in my decision making. So I would just add, you know, that I think perhaps the way to go is maybe let it kind of sift out overnight and open up some time tomorrow to make some final decisions if there are other things we want to direct staff to
do.
Well,
how about this? Is Mr. Jordan going to be here tomorrow? He's not. Okay. So, you know, we can always do what we want to do whenever we want to do it, essentially, in terms of a permit like this. So, yeah, why don't, you know, let's keep your thought open, Mr. Johnston, but let's have, you know, the March board meeting, and then if we decide that something else needs to be done, we don't have to vote on it. You know, and we can get Mr. Jordan's input also. I know he's been busy reading away and up to speed, and, you know, I think it would be fair to have his input also. And, you know, after that board process, you may have better clarification on what you think should be done, you know, in terms of how we direct, if we direct, whether we're ready to vote. So I say we just kind of leave it open, and we can change when we want to change, if we want to change it. Go ahead, Mr. Delgado.
I was wondering, on a simple matter, if we might be able to get copies as soon as possible of the PowerPoints we saw tonight.
Okay. That staff can do that.
All right. Yeah. And I wanted to mention the fear factor. Tonight it's been applied to the uncertainties that the growers have. And the other fear factor I heard tonight was in those PowerPoints. And it's also pretty well documented in the findings that we're living next to one of the most polluted water systems, natural water systems in the country. And that's a result of all of us living in this area for many decades. And we get the goods and the bads from the agriculture. You know, we can't swim in the river, or we wouldn't want to anyway. And we really don't want to have anything to do with the water because it's so polluted. But we also get very cheap, high-quality produce year-round. So we are the benefactors, and we're sort of the victims of the goods and the bads. And so we're all in this together no matter what happens. But that fear factor to me includes, you know, having a river that's so polluted and having one community's groundwater, you know, that was causing, you know, very, very tangible health problems. And if we continue to worsen, as the data shows, things are getting worse, not better, with the voluntary efforts that everyone has made, it apparently has not been enough, and things are getting worse. And we don't want more San Gerardos. We want a cleaner system. And so, I mean, that's the other fear. There's a second fear factor.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if between now and March that this moving target of Dr. Los Huertos' program, which was an improvement on the previous product that he started with, if that could be looked at by him and the ag community as far as how it can and how it cannot be incorporated into the cooperative groundwater monitoring availability, where proposals for such cooperative monitoring efforts can be approved by our executive officer within this ag order. And you mentioned that they're night and day in some ways, but there's probably a lot of ways where they're fairly compatible. But we don't really know that because we really couldn't look at it because it's a new written product, so it was outside the sideboards of tonight. But it would be nice if by our March hearing we were able to get Mark's feedback on in a detailed way about where it's possible and not possible to fit into what's available to the discretion of the executive officer with this ag order.
Mr. Briggs, is that something in Francis that staff can do?
Yeah, I wonder if that's within the...
you have closed the The written record. But just so that there seems to be some lack of understanding, I guess clarity is an issue here, is that the order, you know, if you even look at what the order is here and what you're going to be looking at tomorrow, the amount of provisions in this order are basically comply with water quality standards, make sure you do this and this and this, but it's up to the farmers to decide how to do it and when to do it and what way they're going to do it. And that seems to me, from what I understand, is the area that Dr. Los Suertos is looking at, is how to come into compliance, how to do monitoring. And your order sets the parameters of that, but doesn't set how you do it. So those proposals of different ways to achieve compliance, different ways to monitor, are totally within the scope of the current order and the proposed order to allow that to occur. It's not something that has to be decided on by March. Your job is to look at what are the parameters to assure that actions are taken that protect water quality, not what are those actions. And so I would suggest if you read the proposed order and the ag proposed order, and look at exactly what it is that it says in terms of the actions of the parties. And is there any actions that you think are, you know, in a too directive or something that concerns you? But just look at it in terms of what it actually says for people to do, because I think there's a little bit of a disconnect about saying it's making us do all these things, but in fact, it's parameters of where you work within, but the farmer chooses how to get there. So,
Francis, are you saying that the ag alternative could be utilized as the farmer's way to respond to all the parameters of the draft order? Because that doesn't sound right to me.
They can come up with a proposal to do self-auditing. They can come up with proposals to group together in coalition groups. The proposed draft and the current order that applies to farmers allows them to do those things. So they don't need their proposal to do the things they're proposing. They've asked for a proposal that has fewer specifics than what the staff's proposal. As they said, they would have a bunch of conditions that they wouldn't have to do. Certain plans, they would not provide certain monitoring. You know, there's fewer things they would provide, but all the things they've said they want to do, they can do within the order that is being proposed by staff.
I think one of the fundamental differences is just in what's reported between the two alternatives. And we're saying we need to have the information sufficient to see what's actually happening, as opposed to an average aggregated conglomeration of data that has highs and lows, and we see the middle. I think that's really one of the fundamental differences.
Well, there's what's reported in terms of monitoring. There's also the, as Mr. Costa mentioned, there's doing separate sets of nitrogen load calculations for 1,300 plantings on 800 or whatever it was, 500 pieces of ground. I mean, it's a lot more than just reporting, I would think. I mean, they're fundamentally different.
You know, one thing I just want to say is that this was a workshop, not a hearing, which means that people said things. You didn't necessarily get a response to all the things that were said, and so that's one.
You didn't get a response from staff.
Right, exactly.
Everything that was said.
Yeah, so, you know, that may be true, a true interpretation, I don't know, but I just wanted to say that this is a workshop, and so what I suggest that you do, if you have questions that you want to be sure that you get the answers to, you can direct those questions to Mr. Briggs and get those questions, you know, told where in the record that is. Or if there's anything that you want additional information that you think isn't in the record, you can request that Mr. Briggs make sure that that information you want is answered, you know. not that you can add more evidence to the record, but you, if there's information that you want to have, you can ask Mr. Briggs for that.
So in answer to the chair's question as to whether there was any way to get, now that the record is closed, for us to look at Dr. De Los Huertas' further work product, is the answer no?
Well, what I was going to suggest is that I haven't looked at it. I don't know if it's new evidence or just in the nature of comments, but I can certainly look at it with staff and see if it is actually new evidence or just an evaluation of what's already in the record. I don't know, so I can look at that.
Well, and if you find that it's kind of an evaluation of what's in the record, then I think you'd like to see more of a staff comment on it, a comparison.
That would be helpful, yes. Yeah.
Okay. I'll look.
Can that be done? Lisa? Michael? Angela? Chris? No? Michael?
What was the question?
I know it's late.
He asked if it could be done.
I said, can you turn off all the lights when we leave? No. Shut the door.
Yeah.
No? Okay.
But I do want to ask a question. If in March, if Dr. Los Huertas were to have additional information about how his revised project fits and doesn't fit, that would be okay, right? That would be within the sideboards.
Right, yes. Yeah.
Okay. So there is on page 9 of the monitoring reporting program, there is a paragraph 6 that talks about, at a minimum, what the cooperative groundwater monitoring effort must include and what requirements and sampling protocols it must comply with. And I would like to know in March, you know, if it is consistent with these requirements that are on page 9 of the monitoring and reporting program. And you're already going to do a comparison, it sounds, and that's from staff's perspective that would be done. But it would be great if the ag industry could in a simple way inform the board of where the ag order just won't work with the ag alternative and where they might have some common ground. Because tonight all we heard was they're very different, but we haven't even seen Los Huertas' product. So it'd be nice in March if it was in an easily digestible format where, for the first time, we could digest the two products side by side, sort of. And I know we're going to get it from staff, but it'd be nice to have it from the industry's perspective as well.
Can I just clarify your question or direction? So there's two places in the draft order multiple places in the draft order that specify that the water board encourages dischargers to coordinate the effective implementation of cooperative water quality improvement projects. There's also that language specific to groundwater. You're talking about both, I think.
Right.
Dr. Hunter.
Yeah, just.
And then I'm going to sleep.
Okay. So I'll try to be speedy. I just want to caution that I think we want to be careful and Francis, I know, will keep us on track of how much more we can do before we actually make a decision up or down on this hearing to interpret and understand what Dr. Los Huertas is, you know, designing or conceptualizing and then structuring, because we have other stakeholders are going to expect to have some review and some input, and so we don't want to bog down in that effort of trying to get more detail when it's not really there yet. So, you know, I like the direction. I think there's an opening there. I think I have confidence that what we're asking of Dr. Los Huertos to do as a next step is going to be a productive thing, but it has to be within a certain range so that we're not opening it up to the point that, you know, we're leaving out other perspectives that have been very engaged in this process. I don't want anyone to be cut out at the, you know, right at the end point. So that's something we need to be careful of, and I know Francis will keep us on track. But I wanted to say that.
Okay. If there's no more comments.
Now I have one. They wouldn't let me have a microphone. I think that was by design. I would like clarification from the board on what our direction is. I understand looking at the Dr. Osworth's proposal, looking at terms of groundwater.
Is that on?
Yeah.
And I understand that your direction to look at Dr. Los Huertos' proposal, especially with respect to groundwater, and compare it to the criteria that is in the MRP, the Monitoring Reporting Program. But I'm at a loss as to, Dr. Hunter, you were saying there are other people that are involved. There are other stakeholders involved. So are we limiting this to Francis taking a look at it to see whether it's, to see how much of it we can talk about in March? Is that what we're doing?
I think so. Francis has to look at it and see if it's a submission of new information. If it is, the written record is closed.
Okay. Then we're limited in responding in the manner that Mr. Delgado asked us to respond to it.
Well, I don't think...
We don't know that yet.
Well, I think my understanding is that look at it to see if it fits within the parameters of the staff's proposed order in terms of what would be appropriate in a, you know, would it meet the conditions for a cooperative monitoring program, for example,
right,
that are set out right in the, you know, or is it management practices that can occur at any time at their own development or whatever? I mean, we'll look at it and just...
And I think it's part of that as you get closer to understanding where the connections are and what might be new, then there could be some exchange with Dr. Los Huertos giving some guidance as to what other kind of detail he can outline for us.
Right, okay.
Okay.
I think that what Mr. Delgado was asking you to do, Francis, was exactly as you stated it, to say would it meet, would it be a potential form of compliance, essentially, with the existing draft order. What I was asking you to do was to look at it and see if there was a way that we could get a look at it without violating the procedures of this board. In other words, if it's a summary of what's been already placed in the record and there's a way we can legitimately look at it. So there were actually two different requests
of
you.
And I understood that part, too. Okay.
Okay. This meeting is terminated.
Wait, let me just say something. So say it's like a little bit more than what's already been in the record, and, you know, what the rule is that if you have an adjudicatory proceeding, which that's what this is, that you wouldn't add, after the record closes, you don't add anything new to the record if it would prejudice any party, including the board. So if it's a really complex, long document, and then you put in the record now, then it would be, to me, prejudicial to the parties, including the board, because there really wouldn't be adequate time to evaluate that and provide the public an opportunity to evaluate it and then give you proper, information about it. If it's on the other extreme, it's like, here's a way to do a cooperative monitoring program. You wouldn't need to see it. That would be something they could submit later, and then you or the executive officer would approve the program or not. And it could be something in between. So that's what I'm going to look at and give you direction or advice about.
Francis, this information is not new information. It was brought up at previous workshops.
Well, there's the agricultural proposal, and you allowed into the record their additional documents related to that. And my understanding is there is a whole separate sort of product that's in preparation, but right.
So, yeah. Francis, kind of what I'm taking from what you're saying is that what I was asking for a few minutes ago is probably more appropriate if the board decides in March that they would want something like that. That would be, at that point, a direction that the board could take.
Right, and you know, you could, many things could happen. You could choose to adopt the staff's proposal with some changes to it, and you could then say, okay, and then staff, we want you to bring back later this other part, and we'll evaluate that. You know, you could, that could be a possible.
And theoretically,
option.
We could also say in March, we don't want to make a decision today. We would like to give the public a chance for the Los Huertos revise to be digested by the board.
Right, exactly.
In case it's substantial enough that it might be a better avenue with the ag order, or after digesting it, we might decide that it's better to be incorporated into the ag order and approve the ag order after we have a chance to digest it.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, 8:15 tomorrow morning, right, Mr. Briggs?
That's right.
Okay, thank you all, and good night.